Hi, this is Erin.
And this is Jessica.
And this is episode 120 of the Double Knit Podcast.
Good evening.
Yay! First item on the agenda.
Cardi party.
Woo! I'm so excited. Hashtag Cardi Party 2016. It starts on Thursday, September 15th, which is very close to right now.
Yes, we're recording this on Tuesday the 13th. Yes. So I don't know if this will be up right in time for it, but we are talking about it on the Ravelry, or you guys are talking about it. I'm reading what you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah, so you can knit any cardigan. No whips allowed. It should be an adult-sized cardigan. Mm-hmm. I should clarify that. Adult-sized cardigan, no whips allowed. Finished by, I think, November 30th is the end date, because we're starting at, like, mid-month. And if you want to double knit, and the two knit lit chicks fall sweater knit along, if you choose a cardigan, you can double dip with them, because Barb, I think, is going to participate in knit along, and they, Barb created a couple bundles on their group, which I can link to in our group, and I also created a bundle today.
I spent a bunch
of time, there's like two pages. So any of the cardigans that people were talking about in the group, in the general chatter for the knit-along, I added to the bundle, and then I just added a bunch of other ones. So I tried to add stuff, some patterns that are free, that are different weights, so there's some variety, some pay patterns, some that are from, like, books and publications, plain ones, if you're new to sweater knitting and you want to try, like, a simple sweater. Cables, lace, color work, like, a little smattering.
You name it.
A smattering of different types of cardigans. And different weights of yarn, too.
Yes.
So everything from figuring up to bulky.
Cool.
So check that out. And then I didn't add, like, the ability for everyone to edit that, but I can if you guys want to add more cardigans. I just like to be in control of the list.
Yes.
But if you want to, let me know in the group, and I will add that ability for you guys to add to it.
Cool.
I'm so excited. I've just been thinking about sweaters all the time because the weather. I'm so excited. Okay. Oh, and
you are excited.
I am very
goodness,
excited.
Yes.
If you are participating in the color work knit along that Katie from Inside Number 23, it's a video podcast that I've been loving lately. She's doing a color work knit along, and you can dip in that too. But I think hers starts October 1st, so you'd have a couple weeks. But if you need lots of time to plan or order yarn and wait for it to come, you can do that too. But she allows whips, so you don't have to wait.
Oh,
I just remember that. So, because I'm trying to think of a cardigan with color work. I already chose a cardigan, but, you know, I might knit too. So, I'm very excited. Very excited, because the weather is, like, cooling off, and it feels like fall, because kids are back in school. There's soccer now.
Falling off the trees.
Yeah. I had, like, one fall, like, right in front of me. I was like, fall!
I know. There's one, like, right on my windshield this morning when I got in the car. And I was like, oh, it's happening.
It is happening. I like it.
And the great pumpkining of Trader Joe's is happening where suddenly everything is pumpkin flavored. Magic.
I went to the grocery store today and I saw that Barbara's Puffins, they have a pumpkin one, which I'd never seen before. I will eat it.
Yeah.
I love pumpkin stuff.
Well, Trader Joe's has gotten, like, they've taken it to, like, a new level of, like, everything in the store is pumpkin.
Which sucks if you don't like pumpkin.
I know, that's
the problem. I love pumpkin. I'm not particularly fond of pumpkin spice lattes. I'll have, like, one, but I get, like, one pump of syrup.
Yeah, they're too sweet.
Because they are very sweet. I just like a hint of pumpkin. But I love pumpkin baked goods.
Yeah.
So I will eat any of that. All of it. Any of it. Pumpkin Pop-Tarts. That was, like, my thing last year.
Trader Joe's does those, too, I think.
They do?
Yeah, they're, like, their house brand.
I got mine at Grocery Outlet for 99 cents. Because they're actual Pop-Tarts. They could have been from last year.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Or the year before. Whatever. Okay. I'll stop talking about pumpkin stuff.
I don't know why I'm like, welcome to our new pumpkin podcast.
I don't have any FOs. Do you want to? No. What? No, I don't.
Okay.
Do you want to talk about what you're working on?
So, I don't know if you all are following along. Remember when I was talking about books on the last podcast? and how I just, like, couldn't finish anything and just couldn't bring myself to care. I'm getting a little of that in my knitting right now, so here's what's going on. I knit, like, 4 Helix hats because I hit a lull, and that's what I do. And I also knit a pair of cabled mitts called Alicia by a designer named Erin Burnell.
That's me!
Yeah! Those have been in my queue since you published the pattern, and I was like,
I took those. Ooh. You took those pictures. Did you take
those pictures? I did. I took the photos for you of that. So, yeah.
It's a free pattern on Ravelry.
Yeah, and I did it for singles. So I was trying to do single, I am trying to do a bit of single skein September.
Would you explain what that is if people don't know?
In September, I try to use up single skeins of yarn in my stash. And for me, since I'm a partial skein hoarder, a lot of times it means using even like less, I mean, smaller quantity, you know, all the just leftover balls of yarn, basically, is what it means for me. Other people do like, you know, go through and they have like nice full balls of yarn. Mm-hmm. I have random like 30 grams of fingering weight yarn. What am I going to do with this? And it's also a time that I tend to try to knit a lot of my hand spun because you'll end up with sort of random little balls of yarn from that. Mm-hmm. But so the Alicia mitts that I knit, though, actually I kind of felt like it was like a double Erin because Cascade 220 in the palm colorway that I got from Andy.
Oh, yeah.
And then you knit a sweater like 3
Chuck
times.
By Andy.
By Andy, like
oh,
3 times.
Your trifecta.
I know. It's like it was all connected. So I knit those while on vacation to Boston. And then I started Omnia by Lee Meredith. So the last time we were talking, I said I had started Silencio by Lee. And I have gotten nowhere in those. Like, I finished the band, which was really cute. And then I got to the part where now I had to do all the twisted stitches. And it's one of those things, like, I hit the world's tiniest roadblock. And I'm like, oh, whoa, roadblock. Oh, well, can't go forward. And the roadblock was, like, I didn't have the chart, like, printed. Or I needed to bring my iPad with me. And I'm like, oh, well, don't have the chart. Eh. And then, like, I set it aside and I moved on to something else. Like a dork. So I have the band of that sitting somewhere and I've like paid no attention to it, but then I started Omnia also by Lee, also in some leftover Cascade 220, which is, it's top down and it's got like, how do you describe it? It's got like,
it sounds like new words.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, it's hard to describe. It looks lacy, but it's actually not lace. So what happens is you're doing, a 3-in-1 increase and a corresponding 3-stitch decrease so that it creates bias in the fabric.
Oh, okay.
But the increase that you do kind of creates a hole. So it looks lacy and has this weird movement to it.
It's a faux lace,
which is,
thing.
It's cool. But the 3-in-1 increase is a pain to knit. You're knitting the leg of one stitch and then you're like doing a lifted increase and then you knit the stitch itself and then you do the corresponding lifted increase on the other side of the stitch where you're going the stitch below that. It's really tight. You're supposed to be twisting that middle stitch, which I totally missed in the instructions. I'm not doing that on mine, but it's super tight. It's super fiddly. And I just was knitting it at Pearly Girls like a week ago and I was just like, every time I got to that increase, which is like every 8 stitches or something, I was like, complaining
about
it.
Is it on every row?
Every single round.
Oh.
And so the increases all stack on top of each other too. So it gets tight, 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 tight. And you're like digging to pull out that second leg of the stitch. And it was just getting on my nerves. And I was like, you know what? Set that down. Let's do something different. So I pulled out, a leftover, partial skein of Kitchen Sink Dye Works sock yarn in the, I think it's the Edgar colorway that I bought at the last sock summit.
Yeah. Which is, that yarn is no longer available.
Right.
She doesn't dye anymore.
It's Mercedes Trasovich, but she doesn't dye her yarn anymore, which is really sad. But I knit,
I love the socks I knit yarn.
Estonian Lace Wrist Warmers, which is a free pattern by Evelyn Clark. Super simple little lacy pattern. Really, it was like just what I needed. Like little palette cleanser, like 100 yards or something. I used nearly all the yarn up, which, you know, is like my jam, like just totally my jam. Love that feeling. So did that. And then I knit, Rose City Rollers, which are like a little roll cuff sock. And there's a version
for ankle sock, right?
Yeah. A little ankle sock. There's a version for babies. So I used my remaining hazelnuts in the Seattle Knitters Guild colorway.
Whoa.
I know. That's gone in the Wayback Machine. I knit a sweater out of it, and then I used it for a shawl. I've been using the scraps for it for a million things. I used some of it in my giant colorwork cowl. So I used all but, like, the final gram.
Wow.
Knitting these little baby socks.
Good job,
so I'm like, oh, that's so good. It feels so good. And then I started, this is my new habit of complaining about projects while knitting. I started the Circle Mitts by Sybil R. at knitting last night using some hand spun. I call the skeins Three Wild Downs because it's from all these samples I got over the years from the Three Wild Down class that Judith teaches. So it's all like cashmere, camel, and yak. It's a free pattern. And it's sort of more of a sketch than a pattern. And it's just confusingly written. And there's some typos. And I was trying to, like, read it off my phone while I was knitting last night. Where you basically start knitting the thumb, knitting, like, the ribbing of the thumb. And increasing out into a circle.
Okay.
Until it covers, like, most of your hand. And then you do these little short row wedges and things. So it's cool. And I got really frustrated with it knitting and, like, set it down at knitting because everyone's like, just forget it. Don't even bother. Because I kept complaining, like, because one of the notations in the pattern was to do it MK1P. And I'm like, what the heck? And there's no, like, glossary of what the stitches are supposed to be.
There's no key.
And we're like, what the heck is this? What the heck is this? And I realized she just calls a make one instead of calling it M1. She calls it MK1 and she typoed it. So it was MK1P.
Which to me, that would be make one pearl.
I know, but it wasn't because it was supposed to be like, you are doing, well, we had this whole conversation because the ribbing you're doing is pearl knit pearl is the pattern. And then you pearl knit pearl and the make one is supposed to occur between those two adjacent pearl stitches. And the next round you're supposed to be just doing knit one, pearl one.
Okay.
So I knew that the stitch I was making needed to be a knit stitch.
Mm.
It was just a typo. I think she just meant to say make one, but like, why does she have to say make one as MK1 when the whole
standard
world uses M1? Yeah.
There's
so stuff goofy again, tiny roadblock. Made me go, I'm not going to work on that. Me. So I worked on it a little bit today to try to like, the other thing too, so you have to, she doesn't like tell you the increase pattern. She tells you to do it randomly, but you're making a pair of mitts. So you want to repeat your randomness. So then you have to like keep track of what you're doing. Again, tiny roadblock. It kind of put me off my feet, but, and I'd also started a helix hat yesterday, or excuse me, not a helix hat. An Xing X's because we went to the movies and that's like my go-to movie knitting. So I just was like, I'm just going to knit this, just stocking it in the round. So I did that. But then right now I'm just starting the ribbing. I have a little leftover ball of Hazelnuts Artisan in Woodland leftover from the Waiting for Rain shawl that I knit. And I'm going to knit the Blue Star hat that Shanna designed.
Oh.
And she named Blue Star after the Blue Star where we meet for knitting. So
mm-hmm.
I thought that was kind of a nice little, again,
bring it all together.
I am. I'm like, I'm just like bringing it all together
mm-hmm.
when I'm not having, and when, I guess everyone's a local designer too.
She is, I was just going to say
like,
that.
And I'm really keeping it local and even Lee's and she's in Portland. So,
yeah.
And I'm assuming Rose City Rollers is someone else who's in Portland.
Yeah,
so,
I think so
I'm keeping it very
so
Northwest
think that
right
was
now.
Like part of the Rose City yarn crawl.
Maybe.
Because
this was like the kids version
ago.
Of it. So there is a grown-up
version.
Oh,
yeah.
Version.
The grown-up version was part
yeah.
of the yarn crawl, I believe.
So, anyway. So that's what I've been doing is basically like starting projects and then getting distracted. And
good job.
Mostly I've been spending all my time on Ravelry thinking, what could I knit with my scraps? Instead of actually knitting
giant
stuff.
Crazy cardigan.
Yeah, there you go. I've considered it before, but like helix stripe cardigan and finger weight
wow.
yarn.
You could steak it.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I could, but I won't.
I'm just looking at you like,
you're like,
come
do
on.
It, do it. I don't have enough yarn for that. I don't have enough yarn for that.
All right. So I'm still working on my rainbow hat. I talked about it last time, although I'll be honest, very sporadically working on it because it's kind of like, the thing I knit when I don't have something easy to knit at a social gathering, I just grab the whole tote
yeah.
bag and take it with me, and then I have plenty of knitting. And I don't really have to pay that close attention to the pattern. And that is based on Goodrin Johnston's Hansel, the full hap, which is a traditional square Shetland shawl, and you can knit half of that, which is a triangle, or the full, which is the square, and you can use it as a blanket or a shawl or whatever. I'm just making a giant one for my kid. And gray for the center square, and a rainbow for as long as it takes me to get there.
Yep.
I'm almost to the green, I think. So, I'm getting there. It's just a lot of stitches.
Yeah.
A lot of stitches. Right now, I'm working on my colorful winter sports outfit, which had just started last time we recorded.
Right. And you were feeling very conflicted about whether you were going to enjoy this.
Yeah. Here, I'll show it to you.
So, are you feeling more like...
I've tried it on, and it fits great. So, I did change the neckline, which was... I wasn't sure if I was going to. It's flipped out, because I just tried it on. Mm-hmm. This is flippy, too, but that'll steam out. Mm-hmm. It's a lot. It's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah. Did you steek the armhole?
I did steek the armhole, and I'm knitting the sleeve from the top down.
Because the original pattern was meant to be knit in pieces, right?
Yes, yeah. And seamed. So, I knit it in the round as one piece, and then steek the armholes and the neckline. So there's like a little, there's a little stake.
I don't know, thread.
Yeah, it's somewhere. So this is from A Stitch in Time Volume 2, I believe. And it's a vintage pattern that I basically kept the motifs for and the idea of and changed everything else. So I changed the gauge, I knit it in one piece, I changed the neckline to be like kind of a deeper crew neck. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing the sleeve from the top down, so I didn't have to deal with rewriting the sleeves and the sleeve cap and stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm on the ribbing at the bottom. Actually, knit the sleeve. This is the second time, because the first time... Well, one and a half. I see that line right there.
Yeah.
I ripped it back to there because I decreased too much.
So,
it's in navy blue, gray, and gold, and the body is a deer. It's a Christmas sweater. So it's deer and Christmas trees, and then it has stripes between these kind of big blocks of motifs, mm-hmm. and then it has like a zigzaggy motif at the hem and at the shoulders.
And on the cuffs.
And on the cuffs. So the sleeves, you're supposed to do this kind of star or snowflake pattern mm-hmm. for the whole thing. This thing is so warm, I was like, I'm not knitting color work in the round.
Yeah, you don't want
yeah. I didn't need that extra warmth.
Yeah, okay.
So I just added the color work at the cuff, and then I'm working on the ribbing at the bottom. So the second one will go much faster because I wrote down everything I did for the first one. But I was just kind of figuring it out. But I'm really happy with it.
Yay.
I'm excited to wear it in a couple months.
For like a week.
To all my holiday events. I'm so excited about it because I was not, I was not sure if I was going to like
it. You were feeling very, very non-committal about it last time we recorded.
I tried it on and then I was like, okay, yes.
Yeah.
Because it is, there's a lot going on. It is much better with the plain blue sleeve than a crazy busy sleeve. Mm-hmm. And I'm knitting Brickless by Martina Bem, finally.
Oh, yeah, I knit that.
Yeah. I bought yarn at Stitches West, I think, before the pattern even came out.
Oh.
This was a while ago. And I'm knitting it in Miss Babs Yowza, which is the yarn called for, in a color called Biker Chick, which I love. And it's like, here, I'll show it to you.
Oh, yeah.
It's over here. I love it. And it's like fall colors. So.
Yeah, I got that.
It's like dark gray, light gray, some burgundy, burnt orange, and a little bit of brighter orange. And it knits up so pretty.
Yeah. It's such a good, it's such a like nice kind of no-brainer sort of pattern. Yeah,
this is my other social knitting besides the hat.
No-brainer, but it looks like something.
Yes.
It's just it's a really good one for that.
Yeah. So I haven't worked a ton on it, but I am working on it. There's that. And then the last thing I'm working on are the Tupshin socks, which are, that's my pattern. Mm-hmm. I'm hosting a knit along with Monica on the Stranded Magazine group for the sock pattern for the month of September. I know some of you lovely listeners are knitting along. It's nice to see everybody's socks.
I saw Sharon knitting hers at Curly Girls last night.
Yeah, it's awesome. So it's my pattern from Stranded Magazine from the Mild Weather issue. The hashtag for the knit along is Tupshin Cal. which that's not a very common hashtag, so I should be able to find it really easily. And it's a sock top down, like traditional constructed sock with a contrast cuff, heel, and toe. It has like 9 rows of color work at the top of the leg and then a little diamond lace pattern, or eyelet lace pattern for the rest of the foot. So I'm knitting the craziest colors ever.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God, they're so crazy. I went to go bright because the sample, I knit the sample, and they're beige and they're very fall colored, which I love, but these are like insane.
Oh, those are crazy. Wow. I mean, fun.
But yes, they're fun. So,
oh, wow. Oh, this is even sparkly. So you've got like
sparkle and
hot,
everything.
Sparkly hot pink and then
neon like, speckles.
Yes, and then neon speckles. Wow. Yeah.
So the kind of orange color is called Juicy. It's from Invictus Yarns, and it has Stellina in it, so it's really sparkly. I've used it in a couple other projects as, like, a contrast, so, so bright. It's, like, a bright orangey pink, kind of. And then the main color is Tosh, Madeline Tosh BFL sock, and the color is called The Radness.
Oh,
yeah. 80s kid right here. They're totally crazy. This is just my bust knitting, so. But I'm getting close to where I do the contrast toe.
Yeah.
See?
Very cute.
Yeah. Just funny, because I also chose Monica's colors for her, because I had a sleepover at her house. And she's like, I don't know what colors to choose. And I was like, let's go look at your stash. And hers are brown and green. They're really pretty. So knitting those, I'm about to start the toe. I'm excited for those too. I'm really happy with all my projects I'm working on right now.
Cool.
And just like planning all the cardigans and sweaters. I can't help myself. Oh, so I wanted to talk a little bit about the cardigan I'm knitting.
Yes.
I haven't pulled my yarn out of my stash yet because I have to dig through my cedar chest to find it. I bought it at Sock Summit. It's a Plucky Knit or Primo Fingering in the trusty rusty color. It's like a dark reddy orange, like burnt orange kind of. I bought 3 skeins to knit a sweater, a different sweater. Like, when was Sock Summit?
A long time ago.
5 years ago or something.
Yeah, something.
So I'm going to knit the Belmont cardigan by Gudrun Johnston from the second Shetland Trader book, which I've had that in my queue forever. Well, since the book came out. It's green in the book, and it's like stockinette sleeves, stockinette back, and then a lace fronts. In fingering weight yarn. I think it's knit on 4s, which is fine for me. I'm really into like fingering weight and sport weight sweaters right now. So.
If I get my act together and actually cast on for a sweater, which is kind of a big gift for me right now, I wanted to knit Sashko, which is a cardigan. It's got like plain sleeves and plain back, but then the front has like a twisted stitch pattern,
which is kind of similar style things.
But it's done in like a DK weight, I think. And I bought some Hazel Lively in Atmosphere to knit it.
Ooh, pretty.
But yeah, I haven't knit a sweater in a really long time because I just don't wear them. You know, I go to work.
Because you're working uniform.
I know. When I wear a uniform at work, so I go to work in my uniform, and then I get home and I like throw on something, you know, like I already have, you know, 40 sweaters at home, so I throw on one of those. So I haven't really felt this like burning need for like another hand knit. Actually, the one sweater that I don't have in my wardrobe is just like something black because my uniform is black. I don't want to knit that, so I'm like, no, I don't think that's gonna happen. But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
No, I'm also like, I get pretty, you know me, I get pretty jazzed when I'm doing the single skein September thing.
Yeah,
and then I start like, you know, getting rid of stuff and like marking things out of my Ravelry stash all used up, like best feeling ever. So we'll see what happens with that.
I know that one of our other listeners is planning on knitting the same cardigan as I am. Aww. So many twinsies.
Cool.
Hannah, I believe, right? Yes. Hannah. Me and Hannah. Sweater twins.
All right.
I'm so excited about
this. You really are.
I still have to swatch. So.
Okay.
I'm planning on pulling my yarn out tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But I did some sewing.
Okay.
I did some sewing. So Noah took Audrey on a father-daughter, like, mini vacation. Mm-hmm. So I took a day off, like, a Tuesday off, so I could stay home by myself all day. And I had a one-day vacation.
Yeah.
It was great. I watched Stranger Things again.
Oh, again?
Yeah.
Wow.
I watched Stranger Things again, because I'd watched it all the way through, so it didn't matter if I was, like...
paying a lot of attention.
Yeah. Paying attention to the mechanized needle going up and down instead of the screen.
Yeah.
So I sewed these pants.
Ooh.
They're ginger jeans in a navy cotton sateen, so they're pretty stretchy.
Uh-huh.
I did the same thing I did with my jeans, except I wasn't sure how much stretch would be in the sateen. Mm-hmm. And they do bag a little bit, so I'm going to take them in along the outside leg from, mm-hmm. like, probably, like, right here. Like, lower, upper, mid-thigh. Yeah,
yeah,
down through the leg. Because they do stretch more than the denim does.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm very happy with them. I've worn them a bunch. They're perfect for, like, this kind of weather.
Yeah.
Because they're, like, still cool enough, but they're not shivering.
Yeah.
So, did that, and I sewed a button-up shirt, B5526. It's a Butterick pattern.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a plain button-up shirt with a collar. And this time, I think, I've sewed it before, but I did short sleeves. It's like that pink and gold plaid.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't have to deal with cuffs at all because it just hacked off the sleeve
right.
and called it a day. But this one, I did cuffs. I'd never done cuffs on a shirt before.
Oh.
It was way easier than I thought it would be.
Oh.
It was a plaque and everything. So, funny thing,
you sewed pants and a button down on one day?
I finished the pants.
I'm like propping my head on the desk right now. What?
Finished the pants on
you
that day.
You've been working on
them. I had been working
okay.
on them. So I got them, like, I got the pockets, like the fiddly
bits. I mean,
I know
sewing is fast, but
yeah.
like, not that fast.
So it also helped that I had made the pattern before.
Yeah.
So I got the pockets and the zip all done on the fronts, so I basically just had to do the back pockets, base everything together and try it on, and then pull out the basting and then assemble, like,
mm-hmm.
for realsies, assemble everything. so it's fast, but, like, the fiddly parts on the ginger jeans are the pockets and the zip fly.
Yeah.
Because they're little parts, and you have to do a lot of, like, pressing and top stitching and all
right.
that stuff, so...
And you did the whole shirt?
I did the shirt, yeah.
Ladies.
Man. It's so exciting. Love it.
Man.
I did wake up kind of early, too. And I just started sewing, like, right away. I ate, like, all my meals at the sewing machine. That was amazing. I haven't done that in a really long time.
Yeah.
funny thing about the shirt, though, is that apparently the first time I sewed the pattern, I didn't put the instructions back. All I had was the cutout schematic,
the layout.
And so I just, like, sewed it without instructions. I just looked up random pieces on the internet to see how
do you do a cuff?
Yeah. Because I've done collars before. That was an issue. But the cuff and the placket, the sleeve pack placket, I was like, ugh. I don't know how to do this.
Wow.
So, yeah, sewed it without instructions.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I felt like such a badass.
That's pretty good, yeah.
And then District Fabric was having their third anniversary sale.
Mm-hmm.
So I went, and everything was 25% off. So I went and I got some knit jersey for a top in the On Day pattern by Deer and Doe, which is a little cropped, basically t-shirt, that you could do short sleeve or long sleeves, and it has banded sleeves and then either kind of a deep scoop neck or a little collar
mm-hmm.
on the crew neck. And I sewed that, I don't know, Saturday, because we went to the fair on Sunday. Sewed that on Saturday.
Man.
And I was sewing up a storm.
Yeah.
And that's cute. I think and I'll totally make this pattern again. I loved it. It takes, like, 1 yard, all the sizes, for all sizes. And I'm, like, the largest size, and I probably could have... I think the next one I'll cut, like, add an extra bit of seam allowance. Just because I'm bustier than French women, apparently.
Yeah.
Since they're a French pattern company. What was I going to say? Oh, it took 1 yard of 56 or 60 inch fabric mm-hmm. for a t-shirt.
Cool.
1 year. And it's super cute. I love it. And it's like in a dark tealy, dark green, black kind of color. So it'll go with like everything in my wardrobe. And I got some.
In mine. Yeah, not mine.
That to say, I have sewn, the first t-shirt I sewed was on my old sewing machine, and it's so much nicer to have a machine with a stretch stitch. It makes such a big difference. Yeah. Instead of zigzagging everything, it looks so much more professional. I was like, yeah, look at this. All right. I also bought fabric at a district fabric for a shirt waist dress that I'm really excited about.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a mustardy, you don't like yellow, but
all right, I know you do.
I'm talking to you guys. It's a mustardy, like rayon tencel blend. That's really pretty, but I had to order, a lining fabric for it because they were out of white rayon challis. Cause that's what she suggested I use to line it. Cause so it'll be nice and flowy
because
it's very, very lightweight. So
that's cool.
A lot of sewing. I'm really excited about the dress.
Wow.
Gotta keep it going. Whole new full wardrobe.
Yeah, apparently.
Come this way. Like, all the sweaters. All the sewing. Fantastic. Love it.
All right.
So what have you been reading?
I read a book and I finished it. Thank you very much. I read our next book club book, which is The Nest. By Cynthia Dupree Sweeney.
Interesting.
So I feel like sort of the log line to the book doesn't really tell you what the book is like, but the story is that you have four adult siblings who have been waiting for an inheritance, which is what they refer to as the nest, and one of them is in an accident and ends up draining the nest and sort of the fallout from that. But it's just a lot more about the characters and kind of digging into their lives and sort of digging into the dynamics of their family a little bit. And it was just it was funny. It was engaging. I found the characters, flawed, but relatable. Like I'd read some review somewhere where someone was like, these people are all assholes. And I just felt like they're not, I mean, to me, they're not, they're just, they're all a little, like, stunted, maybe. They're all a little childish. But, I just really enjoyed it. And you kind of, the story just sort of keeps, I feel like I've described other books like this, too. The story sort of keeps fanning out. Like, you get to know somebody, and then you get to know, like, someone else adjacent to them. And, you know, you sort of, you know, so that you're getting
kind of a ripple
these adult children, and then one of them has children, and so you get them, and then you're just sort of reaching all these different people, and how their lives just sort of touch in these different ways. And I think also it's like, it's set in New York. They're supposed to be from basically like where I'm from. And so there's just sort of, something a little familiar to it, but it was just like really quick to read. It flowed really well. There's a nice sense of humor to it. I really enjoyed it. So I actually finished it.
Yay!
Me. And I just started reading. I forget to write down the author's name. Boy Snow Bird, I think it's called, by Helen Oyeyemi, I think. And I've only read like the first 10 pages of it, but it's supposed to be sort of a, like a modern fairy tale or a modernized, it's like not set in contemporary time, but I just started reading it, and that is very, it seems very, impressionistic in the writing. Like, it's not really like saying quite what it's trying to say, as you're just sort of getting little details. Or anyway, it's interesting so far, but only just started that. But yay, I finished the book.
Yay. I finally finished Shift by Hugh Howey.
Oh yeah. You've been reading that for a while.
Yeah. Cause it's a fat That's book. A big And I'm really tired. I've been super tired. Work's crazy. And end of summer and yada, yada, yada. So it's post-apocalyptic science fiction. I talked about it the last two, maybe three podcasts. It's been that long. But I finally finished it, and I'm going to send it over to somebody else now. I started reading Red Dragon by Thomas Harris, which is a Hannibal Lecter book, like the first one.
Have you read any of this before?
I read Silence of the Lambs a long time ago.
But Red Dragon, is that the one that comes before
it? It's the first one. Right. Yeah. But, like, Silence of the Lambs was everywhere. Like, every, like, 99-cent bin or whatever. Yeah. But Andy lent it to me because she had been on the lookout for it used. And apparently people like to reread it because there are never any used copies anywhere. So she finished it and lent it to me. She also let me, we'll just shift into watching stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I see Hannibal.
I'm watching Hannibal season 3, which she also lent me. So I'm watching them concurrently. Watching and reading concurrently.
I could, season 3 was the one that just did it from, like, did me in. It's just, it got so pretentious and so ridiculous.
I only watched the first episode so far.
Oh, okay.
But she said that they're trying to smash together a couple of the books. So some of the stuff just doesn't make any sense. And I think it was also that he knew he was being canceled, so he just, like, did everything he wanted to do.
Yeah, it gets really, like, and I never use this expression, but let's call it artsy-fartsy. Like, it just got really, like, where you're just looking at the TV going, what the heck are you talking about? Like, people just speak in these ways that no one ever speaks, and it's just, it went off the rails for me, so I stopped watching.
I thought the first season was really good.
Yeah. No, I really thought the first season was incredible, but
I watched
third season was the one where I was like, I'm outie.
I watched the first episode last night, and Noah said, I really don't like the show at all, but the composing is amazing. Like, the guy who composes all the music. And the music is really interesting and weird.
Well, Wes, actually, he sort of had the opposite, or I mean, it's sort of a different, opposite side of the same coin, where he's like, I can't deal with this music, it's so creepy. Like, because I'd be watching it on my laptop, so he'd be on the other side of the table, so he wouldn't be seeing anything I'd be seeing, he'd just be hearing it. So he'd just hear, like, and this creepy music, and he's like, I can't take this, it's so creepy.
It's very creepy and very ambient.
Yes.
It's a good setting. I feel like it really sets the tone for it. So, I am gonna finish that up. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Season 1's the best so far.
Do you watch this and said Amy Schumer yet?
No, it's watching that.
I love Amy Schumer.
I like her. She's not my favorite. I mean, like,
yeah.
Noah likes it when women are wrong. She's it's like, yeah, she's funny. She's very direct. I like that. So, yeah. I did watch The World's End, speaking of comedy, which is fun. It was fun.
Had you not seen it before?
Uh-uh.
Oh, okay.
So the last of the Cornetto trilogy with Simon Pegg and Edgar.
Nick Frost and Simon Pegg, and directed by Edgar Wright. So it's Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and World's End.
It's good. It's about these friends who reconvene after, like, 20 years, after this epic drinking night they had, and they decide, Simon Pegg's character decides they're going to redo the Golden Mile and go hit all...
As pub crawl.
It's 12 pubs or 13 pubs?
It's 12, because it's 12 steps.
Yeah, all right. They're going to go hit these 12 pubs in the town they all used to live in. And there's a lot of bad blood between one character, Simon Pegg's character, and the rest of them.
And everyone.
Everyone else is still kind of friendly, but they all don't like him.
Yeah.
And then there's a twist.
Yes.
It's fun. It's good fun.
It is really funny. Yes, love that.
I'm watching Jessica Jones as well.
Oh, yeah.
I waited till the hoopla died down.
Okay.
And then watched it. I'm watching it. I like it. I'm surprised I like it, actually, because I'm not a huge Marvel movie adaptation fan.
It's not very superhero-y.
Which is,
like,
probably
what I think, what I mean, one of the things I liked about it, too, even though I do, excuse me, watch a lot of the superhero stuff, is that to me it was more like a drama about someone in the aftermath of trauma, and she just happens to have superpowers.
Just like that all the women have some kind of horrible thing, or some kind of thing they're trying to get over, and they deal with it in a fairly normal way. I mean, she's like a superhero. She has superpowers, but they're all trying to deal with this stuff, and they're all kind of badasses, and I really like that.
I really liked it, too.
And the last thing I watched was, Picnic at Hanging Rock.
Oh, right.
From 1975. Mm-hmm. It's a Peter Weir film. He did Truman Show and Dead Poets Society and stuff like that. I like him as a director. And a few people in my Facebook feed were saying, or posted this thing about it, Picnic at Hanging Rock being made into a miniseries. I was like, oh, well, I'm going to watch the movie, and I have the book on, the book's waiting for me at the library. I have to go pick it up. But it's based on a book that's about, takes place in Australia at a girls' college in 1900 on St. Valentine's Day. And this group of well-to-do Victorian girls, they're basically high school age, go for a picnic at this place called Hanging Rock. And then a part of the group, I think it's three girls, and one of the chaperones disappears. And then it's really, this film is so weird. So they disappear, and then it's the aftermath for the school and the community around the school about the girls disappearing, and their bodies are never found.
Yeah.
So they have just disappeared into the ether. And the movie is strange, because so that seems kind of straightforward for kind of like a weird, slightly supernatural plot line. But it's just filmed in such a way that it just, I don't know. It's kind of romantic, and it's got this kind of languorousness to it. Yeah. And then the music is kind of discordant for, it doesn't go with Victorian stuff. It's, yeah. Noah recognized it. It's a Eastern European song. And then there's some weird piano stuff too. So like the whole thing just doesn't jive. And I think that is part of what makes it so creepy.
Yeah.
But I watched it twice because it's like, I need to try and wrap my head around this.
So I haven't seen that movie probably in like 23, 24 years. Yeah. And I remember watching it with Wes. And it's one of those films that we really had very different takes on. He could, I mean, so in the movie, I mean, spoiler, they never explain what happened to these girls.
Oh no.
It's unexplained.
I think they find one of the girls. Yes. They find one of the girls.
Right. But, and she can't,
but tell, she doesn't, she can't, what, she won't happened. Tell them or can't tell them. It's unclear.
Yeah. So for Wes, it was like, it just made him crazy. He like hated the not knowing, like, just tell me. And for me, I really like that kind of strain, like that. Yeah, there is something really dreamy and
you know, it's Victorian times, and they're like, they're reciting poetry, and they're doing this whole romantic St. Valentine's thing, and it's this like picnic, but they're out in the middle of kind of nowhere,
like the Australian desert.
Yes.
And so there's something. Yeah, there's sort of this sinister undercurrent, but you can't put your finger. Anyway, it's very moody, it's very atmospheric, and it just never tells you the answer. It just doesn't. It leaves this giant.
If that drives you crazy, do not watch it.
And I it was one of the first films I think I saw that really did that, like just completely left you hanging as a viewer. And I think, you know, and I think we've talked about this before, and like kind of European versus American film. And American films tend to really tie everything up with a bow. And that if you're watching films, basically not even European, films from other countries besides here, you're much more likely to end up with a story that doesn't tie everything up with a bow and just leaves you with unanswered questions. And that, for me, was one of the first films I remember seeing where it was huge unanswered questions.
Yeah.
And you were just left with this, like,
but
very,
what?
Yeah, but it's, and it, but I think, I feel like it's very effective.
It's very effective.
As a, I mean, you, it's, I mean, and literally affecting, like you really feel something watching it. You feel this sort of sense of
creeped out and
danger,
like, from
and
the beginning
frustration.
I mean, I read the back of the DVD case and was like, okay, I know something bad is going to happen, but the way in which it happens is also very creepy. Like, it made the hairs on my arms stand up, and I was like, I don't know what's going on. There's like kind of this thing about the natural world and then, you know, Victorian society and like these proper girls going into
the wild,
thing. But the way in which it happens is very strange. Yeah.
Anyway, I remember it as a really interesting film, and
I enjoyed it. Yeah. I mean, I would have watched it twice.
Yeah.
And I have the book ready because I want to see where the film and the book
story
match up or don't match up. So,
cool. All right. So I can't remember if I mentioned seeing Florence Foster Jenkins the last time we recorded. I think I might have watched it like right after we recorded. Meryl Streep, she's playing a 1940s socialite in New York. I mean, it's based on a real person who was a huge music lover and supporter of the arts and was surrounded by a lot of people who led her to believe that she was a much better singer than she was. And it's all about how she wants to perform a concert at Carnegie Hall. And there are real recordings of the real Florence Foster Jenkins, and Meryl Streep does her own terrible singing in it. And actually, one of the interesting things is that the director sprung on her when they started filming that they were just going to have her perform live and rather than performing to a playback, which, and it's a great performance from her. There's just, it's sort of crazy, wacky, over the top, but with a very human core to it. Hugh Grant plays her husband, and it was really delightful. And not this, you know, and I'm not one for like feel good movies or whatever, mm-hmm. but it worked. It was sort of goofy and little wacky and somehow very compassionate toward its characters. So I enjoyed that. I'm also finally watched Spotlight, which won the Oscar last year, about the Boston Globe journalists at long last breaking the story about the Catholic Church's role in concealing predatory pedophile priests mm-hmm. for decades and decades. It was a really well done film with a great cast, even though Rachel McAdams is in it. I didn't hate her in it. It's just really well done. It's, you know, it's one of those stories where, you know, the news of it, you know, we all know the actual story at this point, but about the, you know, sort of a bit of that, All the President's Men of like finding the story, but it's also a lot more about like the group of reporters kind of coming to grips with what they're discovering and how their own feelings and their own lives are kind of pushing them toward this story. So it was well done, really interesting. Also, we just went last night to go see, or not night before last, to go see Kubo and the Two Strings, mm-hmm. which is an animated film by the same studio that did Coraline and Paranorman. It is, so there's a bit of controversy around this film because it is a Japanese-esque story. It's got a Japanese setting. A lot of the voice actors are Japanese-American, but it's written, directed by a white guy, and the two main voice actors in it are Charlize Theron and Matthew McConaughey. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of disgruntlement in the Asian American community about representation and the fact that here they're making this great film and with these roles that are Asian characters mm-hmm. that are being voiced by white actors. Oh, and the kid too is voiced by a white actor. But if you can separate from that controversy, mm-hmm. really beautifully done movie. The story is Kubo is a young boy who he and his mother, they don't quite explain in the beginning, are being chased by her father. And there's, I mean, you know right from the very beginning of the story, there's this magical element. And origami plays a role in the film. So the look of the animation is sort of papery.
Oh, cool.
It's beautiful to look at. Like, there was just a moment where I was watching some scene, and I was just like, this is exquisite. It's just so pretty to look at. But also just it's just really well done. I mean, and I cried like a baby for like the last 30 minutes of the movie. It's really nicely done. I wouldn't take really little kids to, because it's very Harry Potter-esque. Like, you meet Kubo as an infant where he's just had one of his eyes plucked out by his grandfather. I mean, you know, he's got a grandfather who's trying to murder, like, essentially trying to kill him, or blind him at least, where there's real danger and there's fighting and there, you know, so
just
it's
too scary.
It's and, creepy.
Yeah.
There's some creepy elements, and I would not feel, personally, I wouldn't take small children to see it. I know everyone has sort of their different standard, but on that. Someone asked me at knitting last night who has younger children, and I remember I was watching it, and I was just like, no, I would not take small kids. And there weren't many small children in the theater with us, which I was glad for, because it's pretty intense. Also, it's if you watch Miyazaki films, like, sometimes you're watching one of those, and you're like, I don't have any idea why any of this is happening, but okay, and you're just along for the ride. Mm-hmm. There were some of those sort of magical elements where it didn't quite make sense, or you didn't quite understand, but okay, going along for the ride. And so that even my 16-year-old, when it was over, he's like, I'm not sure I totally understood everything that happened in there. So I think it would also be very confusing for young viewers, but beautiful, like, really beautifully done. And then just a couple of other things. I've been watching a lot of stuff. There are a couple of pilots on Amazon, for those of you who have Amazon Prime, that I feel are worth watching for different reasons. One is they're doing a new live-action version of The Tick, and I'm a huge fan of the original animated Tick. I also have some fondness for the first version of the live-action version of The Tick they tried to do years ago with Patrick Warburton. This version has Peter Serafinowicz, who's in all the Cornetto trilogy films. Slightly different take on it, and so it's just the pilot, so it's just like a half hour, but I did enjoy watching that. But there's another pilot, I don't need to ever see any more of it, but this one pilot is so meta and crazy and so, like, perfectly executed, it's almost defies description. It's called Jean-Claude Van Johnson, and it stars Jean-Claude Van Damme as Jean-Claude Van Damme, but as Jean-Claude Van Damme, who is a retired martial arts star, who is really also a retired black ops agent. But it is done in such a, like, crazy, heightened, meta on top of, I mean, it's crazy. And it's hilarious and bizarre. So if you have Amazon Prime and want to spend 25 minutes just with your jaw hitting the desk, go ahead and watch this thing, 'cause it's nutty. And then the other thing I've been watching is The Night Of, which is a limited series on HBO. It's an 8-episode series about a Pakistani-American college student.
John Turturro in it?
Pakistani-American college student.
I keep going to almost watch it. I can do this right now.
It's really, really dark. It's really intense. I keep, like, watching parts of it and then, like, ugh, I can't watch anymore right now. And moving away, it's really well done. It is dark. It is depressing. It is intense. It is just upsetting. So, yeah, I would only watch that.
I do like John Turturro, though.
I do too. But yeah, it's really intense. It's like, I'll sit down to watch it and then I'm just I have to stop, like, mid-episode sometimes because it's just, it's bad. Mm. I mean, bad things happen, not it's bad. It's good. Well done. Bad things happen.
It's well done enough that you have to stop because bad things happen and it's really effective.
Yes, yeah. Totally. So that's my crazy long list of stuff.
That's it.
Oh my gosh. Okay, everybody then. Ready for a Cardi party?
I am.
Erin is.
I'm totally ready.
Erin's born ready for a Cardi party.
Yeah, I am.
All right. So we will put our show notes at doublenit.net. And you can find us on Double Knit Podcast Fans on Ravelry. And until the next time.
Happy knitting.
Happy knitting.
Bye.
Bye.
Where were you? Train left town, I stand on the corner with my head hung down. Hey, that train kept my girl from town. Hey, 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 hey. I wish to the Lord that train would wreck, kill the engineer and break the fireman's neck. Hey, that train done kept my girl from town. Hey, 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 hey. Right. rations on the table. Coffee's getting cold. Some dirty rounder stole my jelly roll. Hey, that train and cattle girl from town. Hey, 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 hey. There goes my girl. Somebody bring her back. Cause she's got her hand in my money sack. Hey, that train. Girl from town. Hey, 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 hey. Oh, she's rolling on down the line now. Ashes to ashes and dust to dust. Lord, show me the woman that a man can trust. Hey, that train and cat the girl from town. Hey. Enough to make a man lonely. Oh, yeah. That's the way she sounded when she went out of hearing.